Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. Welcome you to the September 26th edition of Vantage Point here on WBAI 99.5 FM. That's on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right, I'm back. That's right, I missed a week last week. You know, every now and then I have to take a little working R&R. And so I'm fresh back from the Republic of Costa Rica, where my family goes every year. So we had a wonderful, wonderful place, as many of you in our audience probably already know, one of the most eco-friendly, democratic, health care for all, education for all. I mean, Costa Rica is wonderful. That's because they don't have no army. They cut the military budget out years and years and years ago, and they take all of that money and they invest it in human beings. So much for American exceptionalism. Well, the fate and future of the nation may well be, I think it is, on the line in November 8th to be exact. The midterm elections are coming up. Our topic for today is, can the Democrats hold the House and the Senate? We'll be joined shortly by my dream team of Bill Fletcher and Earl O'Farrell Hutchinson. Bill is traveling, so we don't know how much of him we'll be able to actually hold on to, but we hope we can get a good bite. And then we're going to open the phone ups to you to answer the question, will the midterm elections matter, actually? If so, why? If not, why not, in your opinion? Will the midterm elections matter? And if so, why? If not, why not? Second part of that question, which is a corollary, the insurrection that took place on January 6th, the January 6th committee is going to resume hearings. We have all of this news coming out about the Orange Man, and a.k.a. Agent Orange. What is your thought about what is the greatest threat to democracy? What is the greatest threat to democracy? We'll be opening up our phones and we'll be getting your opinions. I'm going to give you the number now because we'll have rapid fire. Get as many callers as in as possible once we conclude our interviews with our dream team. And that number, of course, is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Write it down and get ready to jump right in as soon as our interview is over. We're going to have about 15 minutes or so at the end of the show for your valuable input. And I really enjoy chopping it up, so to speak, with the audience and getting input and ideas and getting opinions. This is one of those moments in history which is incredibly important. I had the privilege of doing the convocation virtual convocation for the student body, well, for the college in general, Evergreen State College in Tacoma, Washington, on this past Saturday. It was really an exhilarating experience. But we talked about, their theme was, with liberty and justice for whom? And, of course, that is a critical question at this moment. And we had a chance to talk about the whole history of the fulfilling the unfinished American Revolution. We're living at a period of really, Biden is correct about it, I think, at least I think, fighting for the heart and soul of these United States of America, we will be doing. So anyway, we'll be inviting your your calls at the end of the show. Take the number down, 212-209-287, as we await our dream team joining in so we can get on with our interview for today. I am so eager to talk to them. There's so many questions. We could probably devote 2 or 3 hours with all the questions I have, but no better team than to address these issues than Earl O'Farrell Hutchinson, who's on our sister station, has the Hutchinson Report on our sister station out in Los Angeles, of course. I understand they're now both with us. So welcome to Vantage Point. Once again, my dream team, Earl O'Farrell Hutchinson. Earl, welcome.
And welcome, and thanks again. And Ron, Bill and Ron, what a team.
All right, Bill, I know you're rolling, but I hope you can stay and roll with us as long as possible. Bill, welcome.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you. And Earl, always good.
All right, well, let's get right to it. I wanted to get just a short response, and we'll dig deeper later. I mean, I got a whole series of questions here. I don't know if we can get to them all, because when I get frustrated, I have to call you guys for some therapy. But anyway, a short response like to our question. Can the Democrats hold the House and the Senate? We'll start with you, Bill. What's your sort of short prognostication?
Well, I mean, the direct answer to your question is yes. I think that they absolutely can. And I don't know whether they will, but I absolutely think that they can, in part because this is a completely unpredictable electoral moment. And were it not for inflation, were it not for the abortion ruling, were it not for January 6th, then I think history would be the principal guide in terms of tendency. I would say right now that history is one of the factors, but only one of the factors in looking at what could very well play out in November.
Right. All right. Earl, I know you've been firing out a lot of stuff. What's your prognostication?
Well, like Bill, the short answer is yes. A slightly lengthier answer to expand on that is, I think everything Bill said, he touched upon January 6th, abortion, inflation. Obviously, these are major issues, and obviously they will come into play. And also probably one other one, too, the DOJ, Garland, Trump, this little drama that's going on back and forth with the documents, i.e. a possible prosecution at some point. So I think they're all in play. I think it really comes down to this, and we've said this. I don't think we can say it enough. How the Democrats' message. Now, actually, Biden has had some very good legislation that he's gotten through with almost zero Republican support. Build Back America, infrastructure, taxes, a lot of good things. So it's how they message that and how not only Biden, but other Democrats can message and piggyback on that. If they can effectively do that, then I think, yeah, it'll be a close runoff. No doubt about that. But back to the short answer, yes, they can.
All right. Well, that leads me, your longer answer fills in the question that I have, because I can tell you I need some therapy when I get frustrated. I think it was either today or yesterday. I think it's a CNN New York Times poll, but it is a poll, a reputable poll. That goes through all this, what, you know, the Democrats, the congressional preference. Republicans are up slightly, but the Democrats have closed the gap. And then they ask the question, if the election were held today, what would it look like? And it said 45% for Biden and 42% for the orange man, a.k.a. Agent Orange. Now, y'all got to talk to me. Bill and Earl, with all y'all just talking about, how could that possibly be? I don't understand that.
Because it's a mass movement, Ron. I see. I think that it's really important that we understand this is a virus that has spread in the system that was actively encouraged by the Republican Party up until it got completely out of control. And so there's a couple of different things to look at. One is that for people that are saying that they would vote for Trump, there is probably mixed in with right-wing populists and fascists, people that are just angry. They're just simply angry right now, and they're just saying that. So I would move it down into the 30 or so of people that are pretty consolidated with a right-wing populist worldview. And I don't think that there is a great deal of hope of getting them out, which is why voter turnout among our core constituencies remains essential and also reminding people of the dangers that we can see in what the Supreme Court did. For those people that are sitting on the fence, looking at Roe v. Wade and the overturning of that, and looking at January 6th, is very much of an eye-opener. But I'm not surprised by those figures, man. Mm. Even though I would love to believe that he would get like 10%.
Right, right. Earl, your thoughts. I mean, I was stunned by that. I'm saying, look, after all of this, everything that we know, you know, and all that could be thrown at the Republicans and the obstructionists and everything, I call them everything but the child of God, frankly. And 45% to 42% is stunning. Your reaction, Earl?
Well, I don't know why you would really be surprised. You know America. Both you and Bill, we've been around the block enough with this. We know America. And it's not just now. We're going back deep, as Bill said. The virus is there, but that virus has been there for a long time. Trump just brought it out. He brought, we always like to say, he brought the sewer to the surface. He made bigotry respectable. So I don't know why that would be a great surprise. You know, Bill and Ron, there's one figure I cannot get out of my head. And this is a partial answer to your surprise, Ron. 74 to 75 million people voted for Trump. Now, we're not talking 2016. I said in 2020. Mm-hmm. You had 4 years of this guy, the criminality, the thuggery, incompetence, misdirection, lies, everything under the sun, but yet from Trump in 4 years, not one, not two, but not three, but four, 75 million voted. And here's the even more stunning and horrific thing. If Trump hadn't screwed up so badly on COVID, he might have won. Not only one, but one big. Goodness so when gracious. You really think about that, why would you be surprised? You've got an undercurrent in America, essentially, that Trump appeals to. Big undercurrent. He brought it out. He made things legitimate, bigotry, anti-immigrant, you name it, every anti under the sun. So they haven't gone away. They never have. And quite frankly, they never will. But, Bill, I think you do make a point. Great point that I think we can't really, really skip past. Messaging is important. I already said that. But Ron and Bill also think turnout is important, too. The GOP, they're going to turn their base out. There's no doubt about that. The whole history of midterms shows that the GOP, conservatives, older whites, rural, blue-collar, but especially older whites, they do religiously turn out. Younger people, Hispanics, African-Americans, very poor turnout during midterms, off year elections. So a lot depends on how the Democrats message. Secondly, their get out the vote drives how effective they are.
Mm. Now that leads me to my next question. And this is, again, like I said, this is a therapy session for me because I just can't figure some of this out. What is the Democrats' obsession with chasing white voters as the target constituency for the midterms? And I just want to give a couple of examples. Ryan, who is from my old town, you know, my base for many, many years, and my home, my history is a tale of two cities, and that is two steel towns, actually, Youngstown, Ohio, and Pittsburgh, more Youngstown than Pittsburgh, because I spent more of my life in Youngstown than in Pittsburgh, though Pittsburgh was the place that where might sort of help forge my political consciousness or the commitment to social justice way, way back. But I know a lot about Youngstown, a former steel town. So there's a guy named Ryan running out there. And he's running against one of them really Trump crazies. And by the way, parenthetically, and we'll talk about this in a minute, Democrats have developed a strategy of trying to invest in the Trumpiest candidates so that they can be defeated. And yet Ryan is running, he's running like neck and neck. In fact, he's even behind in the polls. If we go over to Pennsylvania, Fetterman, a more progressive candidate, Ashley, in terms of his politics, I interviewed him once on our show. I think he's a Bernie devotee. But again, you know, he is up. He is up 5, 6, 7 points. So he's doing much better. But there's concern that, you know, that gap will be closing. And I don't hear either one of them in any way, when you talk about messaging, saying anything other than essentially going after white working class voters. They seem to be, that seems to be the target. That's what they believe will be the key. I have a different perspective, so I'm just wondering. I'm going to start with you on this one, Earl. What's this obsession with chasing these white voters?
Well, Ron, this is not new. I mean, when you go all the way back 20 years to Clinton, you know, we began to see it then. What did Clinton do? His formula is, I've got to move not only to the center, but right of center, the Democratic Party. In fact, he bragged about that. He billed himself as Democrat that's going to really, really take a hard look, even roll back. And he did, too, in many areas, many of the old Truman, Rooseveltian, FDR, all that stuff from the past. So his whole thing then was with the Democratic Party, move it to the right, go after the white middle class, and then by extension, the white working class, blue-collar workers. The old Reagan Democrats, get them back in the fold again. So it's really not new. It's an old strategy. And it's something that's endemic in the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. Now, progressives obviously take a whole different perspective on that. Ron, that's you. That's Bill. That's me. We have a broader approach. We know that we have to have programs, have to have pitches, have to have appeals, things that really are going to energize young and not so young African Americans, Hispanics, Asians, LGBT, but especially African Americans in the key areas, in the key states. So, again, we have an internal war within the Democratic Party over that question, Ron, that you raised. So the real question is, no matter what the candidate is, at whatever level, which way will they go? It's almost like an either or. But quite frankly, it should not be.
And Bill, I know from the very beginning of the last election, I know this is one that you've been on also.
Absolutely. See, I agree very much once again with Earl. I think that we started to really notice this actually when Mondale ran. And this whole what you were describing, Earl, about the idea of let's regain the so-called Reagan Democrats. I think I would just add this. I'm not against organizing white folks. In fact, I actually think that there really does need to be a white worker strategy that is pursued by the Democratic Party and organized labor as part of a larger strategy that I would call the new majority. And the problem is that the Democratic Party doesn't really recognize the coming into existence of a new majority. They continue to think in terms of white people as a defining feature and are ignoring other demographics and social movements. And so there's this relentless hope that they can win back the so-called white middle, as opposed to understanding that a new majority has actually come into existence in this country, and that new majority has to be more carefully organized and focused. That's what we should be doing. That's why we need someone at the head of the DNC that gets that at the level of strategy, and that we force this issue on candidates, including progressive candidates who just seem to miss it.
You're right, because I was going to say that even, unfortunately, even the Bernies of the world and many of them, they still have that same old priority within the working class. It is the priority of white workers. And there's a seeming reluctance there. You know, but I guess there was a whole book reluctant reformers of just dealing with this question of race. And frankly, it has to do with this fear that if you appeal openly to black workers, Latino workers, black and brown and whatever, that you're going to alienate white workers. And this drives me, because I think the other thing, the underlying reality, even with the electoral turnout that you cited in 2020, Earl, the reality is how many millions of other white people, but also how many millions of other black and brown people either did not register and did not vote. This, it seems to me, is what the Democrats keep missing. I mean, Trump actually kind of stumbled into it, and there were some people on the sidelines who were alienated non-voters. They were not the probable voters. It is non-probable voters in the so-called consultants' lazy formulation that came off the sidelines and now have seized control of the Republican Party, essentially in terms of their MAGA philosophy following the Orange Man, a.k.a. Agent Orange. And I think this is the secret sauce. I'm going to do a piece on the secret sauce in a minute. You know, when you do gumbo, Mark Morrell talks about doing gumbo. Everybody knows when you're doing gumbo, the secret is in the roux. you get that roux down real good, and that's that flour, and you put it in some oil, and you get it all seasoned up and everything. And if that's in good shape, that base is in good shape, the rest of it is in good shape. That roux ain't in good shape, you got bad gumbo. It ain't gonna work. So that's again, it seems to be one of the key oversights of the Democratic Party, and that's one that really, really, really is driving me up the wall, because it just seems to be. I mean, they act like. I mean, it's like we're radioactive when they're running to the votes that are less likely and running away from votes that are more likely. And you know, there's this piece that they did of, you know, spending millions of dollars, some PAC. I didn't, you know, both of you probably know the specific PAC that's doing this, investing and getting the Trumpier voters, candidates elected. And I keep asking myself, but what if you took that millions of dollars and invested it in black and brown voter turnout and organization and mobilization? Wouldn't that make a difference? And I pose the same question to the two of you.
Well, Let me just jump in here, because I might lose you guys in a second, because I'm at the airport. I think part of the problem, Ron, is that the three of us are part of the legacy of Reconstruction. And we know intuitively that there's a new majority. And we know intuitively that that new majority has to be constructed on a basis that extends democracy. And as such, there really are two major blocks in this country, and the Democratic Party establishment, much of it, is trying to keep a foot in both blocks, and it can't work. It won't work. And so part of what we have to be doing is building up the neo-reconstructionist, or what some people call the third reconstruction. We are the legacy of that. We're the legacy of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. That's what we need to be pushing. And there are people in the Democratic Party that they're not so sure.
Right. Earl?
Well, I'd like to add something else, circling back on the white working class, that I think is important to understand. Not only why the Democratic Party, why they, at this point in time, and going back in time, why they essentially said, we need a big stratum of white workers. We can't win without them. Even though, I don't know, people, Obama certainly proved that twice. But let me go back to this other point about the GOP. Unfortunately, Bill and Ron, there's a brutal reality here that the Democratic Party essentially is reflecting. And the brutal reality is this. The GOP, whether we like it or not, and we definitely do not like it, they are defining the Democratic Party. And what do I mean by that? Essentially, for decades, going back to Reagan, they pounded on one thing. And that's why we saw Clinton begin to make the shift. They pounded on one thing. You're pandering to African Americans. You're pandering to Hispanics. You're pandering to LGBT, to women, suburban women. You're pandering to them. That's racism. That's racism. That's bigotry. That's this. That's this. They put all the isms on that. They scare, they terrorize a lot of Democrats saying, well, wait a minute. Reagan's winning. Bush won one time. The other Bush won two times. Well, wait a minute. Maybe there's something here. So unfortunately, they're still buying into the GOP narrative that by going after African American votes with all spending money, appeals, programs, all the things that we know have to be done to attract a significant number of African Americans and keep attracting them, they're loath to do that simply because they're buying into the GOP narrative. If you do that, you're pandering to blacks. And if you do that, I mean, you're going to alienate everybody. Everybody being white, blue-collar, rural workers. So, again, we're going circular on that. But the Democrats, unfortunately, are buying into that, far too many of them.
Right. Well, yeah, it is really, really unfortunate. It's very, very frustrating. I mean, to look at a state like Georgia, and where you have, I mean, the Republicans have put up Herschel Walker, a total idiot. And here you have the brilliance of Raphael Warnock. And the race is like neck and neck. In fact, even Warnock is playing race neutral politics, you know, so to speak. I mean, it's an infection of its own that I think is disastrous, which really is a redundant question in some ways. But I ask the question, you know, somehow or another, we tend to come to the rescue. I'm not sure that we can this time. I absolutely agree with Bill's opening. And yours too, Earl, that these people are going with this conventional stuff. This is not a conventional moment in American history. It ain't. This is one of the most incredibly dangerous moments in American history. And so you can't use the normal rules should not apply and actually would not apply. And I do agree with this messaging question, which I'm gonna want to come back and spend some time on. But the issue is, what I want to pose is, where are we as black voters? What do we do? I mean, if the Democrats don't seem to get it, but then, I mean, I'm not sure we have any alternative but to try to figure something out that sees the principal contradiction for what it is, even if these people are blind to this reality. And that's for me, having to say that is exactly the problem, because there's a whole lot of younger people saying, what the hell are you talking about, Ron and Bill? Why should we be bothered by voting at all?
Oh, there's a very easy answer for that, man. I mean, but before we get into that, let me just say one quick thing about this white worker matter. See, the term white worker is being used very broadly and often in mainstream circles as a white person who hasn't gone to college, which is not a definition of a worker.
That's right.
And one of the things that a white person who does not go to college is very different than a black person or a Chicano that doesn't go to college. And in terms of where they end up in the income stream and the kind of work they do and everything else, actually, the Tea Party base and Trump's base is much more found among the white middle strata and upper level. So when people use that term white worker, they're abusing the term. That's one thing I think it's really important to point out, because it can lead to bad strategy. The other part is that why vote? I mean, when you look at what is actually at stake and what these characters are talking about doing when they get elected, I mean, there's no comparison to any criticism that one might have of the Democrats. They're just not. And that's what I think in some discussions I've had with some younger activists, I've just asked them, who's talking about stealing the election? Who's talking about denying what happened, right? Who's talking about, the issue of the climate, right? And who is? You know, so I think the issues are right there. And we're going to have to really motivate people, unfortunately, because you think it would be evident.
Earl.
Well, I would say this on the midterms, and I think it's we have to keep addressing this going forward to November. This is the most important midterm, and I don't think we can underscore this point enough. This is the most important midterm since 1862. 1862, Lincoln was on the ropes. The Republican Party, on the ropes. A lot of folk in the North said, we got to get out of the Civil War. We're losing badly. Let the South go. Let them do whatever they want to do. Beat the Republicans. Get them out of there. Well, Lincoln prevailed. It was the election of 1862, midterm, that basically saved and defined the nation. I think this is almost as important. if the GOP takes either the House and or the Senate, even just one wing of Congress, they've already got a locked-down Supreme Court. They already have a majority of state legislatures and governorships and many of the local offices, a majority of them, too. So if that is the case, I don't even think the word was screwed. I think that's charitable and too soft.
I know the word you'd like to say. We're not allowed to say that.
Yeah, I really would like to say it. I'm only going to take another second to say one thing. I'm not feeling totally optimistic. We have a mayor's election in L.A. Karen Bass, Congresswoman Bass. She happens to be my congressperson, one-time chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. Yes. She's leaving Congress. She's running for mayor of L.A. Again, now, Bill and Ron, if you can imagine that, you can't make this up. In Los Angeles, supposedly a liberal, locked-down Democratic city, you got a right-wing GOP billionaire that's running neck and neck with in a Democratic, basically multi-ethnic city. Now, that's L.A. It doesn't take much imagination to go to, Ron, your neck of the woods and other parts of the country and think what we're thinking, what we're looking at. So, no, messaging and turnout is going to be critically important.
Well, I want to turn to that messaging part, too.
Ron, I'm going to have to actually run. I'm sorry.
All right.
I got it. Okay. But thank you for having me on. And, Earl, you take care of yourself and on to victory.
All right.
Well,
whatever.
Well,
whatever.
All right.
So, Earl, you're into it. Because I really want to talk about this messaging part and with you and a series of other things in the time that we have remaining. Governor Gavin Newsom, as you are aware, came out the other day and talked about narrative, and it's been driving me crazy as well. But there's also a part of this that deals with what I might call the ideological progressives and pragmatic progressives. And people like to use pragmatic as if it's a dirty word, but it is more like practical, doable. What can be done is, I think, the category, because I know that there are some people who early on and still may be, you know, not down with Karen Bass because she did not come out and take an abolitionist defund the police position. You know, mm-hmm. And people said, well, if you ain't going to take a defund the police position, then we can't be down with you. Well, what about all the other stuff? You see what I'm saying? You laid out and Bill laid out, and this is what drives me crazy. All of people act like as if politics, that there's no contradiction. There are contradictions. But when you look at the differences between these two parties, between the Republicans and what the Democrats stand for, because what Bill talked about is, you can actually go and see stuff that has been done, that if you were to put it up against what the Republicans doing, what the Democrats are doing, you see that the Democrats are doing. It ain't a lesser evil thing with me. It is a better choice thing. But it does come down to messaging, because they are not even talking about the stuff that has been done. I say, how could you deliver a meal and not tell the people where the hell the meal came from?
Well, you know, Ron, you know, I think there's two principles here when we talk about messaging. And both of us, we're media people, we're communicasters, been doing this a long time, and we're writers, too. One of the basic principles in writing is, and we both know this, and communicasting, talk at a level that's not your level. In other words, I'm not saying condescend. I'm not saying, you know, turn your nose up or down at anyone. But if you really want to reach a broader mass, you've got to keep it simple. And that's just a brutal reality. I mean, you have to message in such a way that relates to people. One of the things that the GOP, and I'll give them this, and Trump, I'll even give him this. One of the things that they figured out a long time ago is keep it simple, use the emotional thing, tap into that, but talk a language that people can understand and create a vision, create a mental picture and a physical of how things are going to look in my life, how much better, and why I need to support this party. I don't think the Democrats do that enough, and I think they don't do it in the right way. I think there are some things they could learn from the GOP on the negative side that could be related to the plus side. Keep it simple. The second thing, Ron, is let's just take Biden. Build Back Better America. What the heck is that? What are you talking about? You talking about a game show? I mean, what are you talking about? Talk to me. Look, talk to Joe and Jane Blue Collar out there. Tell me, you know, I got a kid in school. You know, I'm having problems now, you know, paying the tuition. I got this. I got that. Trying to get them there. I got some gas I got to put in the car. I got this. Just, you know, break it down. Simple terms. Here's what we can do. You know, gas is going to be cheaper with me. College, education, trade school, whatever you want to do, it's going to be cheaper. You know, it may sound dumb and simplistic, but it's really not. It's just appealing to people where they are. Once you do that, you can begin to elevate them and move them up the intellectual, quote-unquote, political food chain. I just think, Ron, Democrats are missing badly the boat on that. And until they really figure that out, how to do that, not all of them, some Democrats do it very well, but overall, the majority don't do it. And I think Biden kind of gets some of that, but maybe not enough. But time will tell.
Yeah, and it's not consistent. You know, I've been saying that, you know, Truman was down to, I forget who it was, Dewey, you know, in that famous election. And, you know, he was supposed to lose, but you had Give Him Hell Harry come out, right? And, you know, some people, I heard some commentary today on CNN. Oh, no. Michelle Obama says when they go low, we go high. Well, you don't have to go low. You can still fight. You can fight clean.
No.
You can fight clean. I'm not in favor of dirty fighting and doing anything. That's what the MAGA people do. The means justifies the end. But on the equation that you're talking about, Earl, some of it is so simple. If you just come out, and Biden did it in one of his speeches, if you go down there, I mean, insulin. The Republicans voted against insulin. I mean, people can understand that. the Build Back Better. There was a whole thing that the Republicans are getting better rates on the economy. Well, damn, when Biden and the Democrats took over, there wasn't no economy. The MAGA people that screwed it up. And there's this whole notion, Earl, you may be right, that, oh, you can't go back in the past, you can't refresh people's memory and all. I can't understand that. When the rescue plan came, it was rescuing people who did not have any jobs. The longest amount of unemployment benefits, am I wrong, in the history of this country, extended to people. Businesses, not every business got it, but lots of businesses got some loans and all. I mean, the Biden plan rescued the American economy, and now they don't get good marks for rescuing the economy. The Build Back Better plan is not a good slogan, maybe, but certainly the bipartisan infrastructure plan, the most recent trimmed down package that you got, Manchin. But they open up with a conversation, and they don't mention any of that. And the one thing that we know is the vast majority of Republicans voted against everything, all of that. They're not branded as obstructionists. They're not. So that's why I need therapy, man. I don't get it.
Well, and here's the double irony, Ron. They vote against everything, but their own people, they take advantage of everything the Democrats do.
Absolutely.
Every one of these programs, they don't turn the money down. You know, let's go back to Build Back America Better. It is true. A great part of that deals with infrastructure. Roads, bridges, highways, schools, internet, rural areas, repair, rebuild. You know, why not just simply say this? Instead of talking about these grandiose slogans and, you know, big ticket, you know, programs that they have gotten through, just simply say, you know what? I got a pothole in your street out here. I'm sure you do too. We're going to have people out here. We're going to have them filling that pothole. We're going to have people widening that lane out there. We're going to have people that are resurfacing that road right in front of your house, right next to that. You know, that's the way you got to talk to people. You know, you mentioned, Truman, Ron. What was his major slogan? Plain speaking. Talk to people that in ways they can understand, visualize, but most importantly, the key to communication the key to messaging is not just keep it simple, but also what's in it for me and how do I benefit personally, not politically, personally. You've got to appeal to that level because there's an element of emotionalism there too. Unfortunately, in the worst negative way, many Republicans have figured that out, and certainly Trump figured that out. So it is incumbent upon Democrats. Get the message right. If not, Ron, I'm sorry. Come mid-November, when we have another conversation, we're both going to need Dr. Freud in Vienna. There's not enough of them to help us.
I hear you. Well, anyway, man, it's great, and we're going to keep talking about it and keep, and let's hope they figure it out. You keep writing about it. I know I watch your stuff. You keep putting the word out and providing great leadership around these issues. Bill puts his voice out. I do the best I can, and maybe somebody will listen and we'll get the messaging right and we'll be able to mobilize people, because this should be a winnable election. It should be that the Democrats should be able to hold on to the House. The Senate should be a no-brainer at this stage in terms of the ability to take on some of these retrograde right-wing idiots that are being put up and have been put up, and you shouldn't have to resort to tactics like funding the Trump. They all Trumpy. It's Trumpy and the Trumpy S, but they all bad.
Yep.
And you know, we should be able to defeat them. So Earl, look, thanks much. Really appreciate you doing great work, and we'll come back. We'll probably do at least one more before the midterms come over, and then afterwards, you know, we're going to do a post-mortem, and let's hope that we're all not on the couch.
Let's hope we don't have to take that trip to Vienna.
All right. Thank you so much, man. Really
all
appreciate
right, Ron,
you spending
again.
Time with us. All right, to our listening audience, Earl Afari Hutchinson joining us for the show, and I forget the call letters. I wrote them down in our promo that went out. He's with our sister station in Los Angeles. And of course, Bill Fletcher used to have a show on WPFW as well. They both were great supporters.
KPFK.
But both of them are great supporters of WBAI. Well, now we want to go out to our listening audience. I hope you've been listening in, and we gave you the number out in advance. We have about 13, 14 minutes to get callers in. And again, the questions that I posed were, will the midterm elections matter? And if so, why? And if not, why not? And this is your opinion from your perspective, because, again, you know, Bill and I and Earl are chatting at this and with a certain framework, which many in our audience may totally reject and say, the hell with these elections, none of them matter, don't mean anything. And it's good. I mean, it's good to hear the perspective. Others may say, yes, it matters, and this is why. And so we want you to call us and let us know at, again, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. The other is, you heard both Bill. I mean, Earl said the greatest threat since 1862. And Bill also talked about this being a dangerous moment in the history of this country. And so I pose to you, if not this, what is the greatest threat to democracy? What is it that you think is the greatest threat to democracy? So those two questions are obviously interrelated. So again, we have time, but you got to jump right in. Jump in right. We got open lines right now. We can take several callers if you call right now at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We'll get you immediately into the conversation. Again, we want to kind of keep the comments as short as possible, get as many people in as possible. Turn your radio down so that you don't hear yourself. We have a delay system. Sometimes that creates problems for folk. But we have open lines right now. You can get in immediately if you indeed call right now. I did this show because, and I bring on my dream team, these two brilliant analysts to give their perspectives and their analysis. And again, you're not obligated to agree with anything they said or anything I said, for that matter. I take it for granted that our audience is fighting for a better world, a better community, better nation, and a better world. But people have different ideas about how to get that done. and they need not necessarily coincide with the views that I have, though I will defend them and you will defend yours. And that's one of the important things about what we do here on WBAI. Let's go right now to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Yes, hi, good morning. Oh, it's afternoon.
It's afternoon, that's okay.
Yeah, I can't hear you that well. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well, yes.
Okay, so you were talking about the Democrats' messaging, and it is lacking. But I think the reason it's lacking is because the Democrats are not fully committed to being the better party and doing the right things for people. They're only doing, you know, the bare minimum that they have to in order to win. And they much rather play this game of, oh, look how bad the Republicans are, you got to vote for us, rather than to say really what it is that they're doing, and therefore you can't hold them accountable and you know, them be committed to it. That's what I get from them. That's what they've been doing. And that's why I'm not so down with them. They have Congressman Bowman in our area, who is a great congressman, and they really tried to torpedo his reelection. And this is a very representative individual and someone who's really, you know, bringing out a different voice and balance and stood strong with the Build Better Act when, you know, they didn't vote for both the infrastructure and the Build Better Act together. And they tried to kick him out, and that's what they do.
Yeah,
they
let me say this on that, because again, the world is complicated, but it's not overly complicated. But it's complicated. It's. But for example, I know Congressman Bowman, have great respect for him. In fact, he was on a forum dealing with reparations with us maybe a month or so ago. I can guarantee you that Congressman Bowman is going to vigorously campaign for the Democrats, because I would disagree with you to this extent. If you go back, and this is why people have to pay attention, when it was the Orange Man, a.k.a. Agent Orange, who drove the economy into the ground. I mean, this country was in horrible shape when Biden and the Democratic team, including an African-American vice president, took over and outlined a rescue plan that wasn't small. They didn't give a little bit of unemployment benefits. Oh, we'll give you like 4 weeks. It was like almost like 50 weeks, more than ever in history. That's not a small commitment. That's a big commitment. The monies that were put into Barry, and they would have done more, except they had strong opposition at every level from the Republicans. They could not do more because there was obstruction. So why really right now the game is, if they had two more senators, because you got two senators, Manchin and Sinema, who don't go along all the time. But on the other hand, they go along most of the time. That's complicated, but that's real. So therefore, we get mad at the two of them, and I do too. But the real deal is that, just like with Obama, McConnell said, we are going to make you a one-term president. McConnell said the same thing about the Biden. He said, we are going to block everything you have tried to do. So you have to take that into account when you're looking at what has been done. And you look at the various programs that have been outlined, none of them have been as bold as they have wanted to. But even this last package on climate change and all things, the biggest, boldest package in the history of the United States of America. And it only got a handful. In fact, no, the last one they did by reconciliation. They had no votes, none, from the Republican Party. So those things have to be taken into account, too. Got to rush quickly to another caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hi, this is Ed from Newark. Thanks for having me on. You know, the cynic in me says no. You know, politicians are politicians. You know, things, you know, the more they change, the more they stay the same type of thing. But you know, I think that these elections, midterms, general elections, have never become more important. I mean, when we look at Trump and I remember warning friends of mine that were on the fence about Trump, whether to vote for him, whether or not to vote for him. And I'm Latino, and it pains me to say that too high a percentage of Latinos actually voting a Democrat, have voted Democrat, are looking to vote Democrat in future elections. And of course, that goes along with national ties. Venezuelans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans tend to vote a little differently than those two groups, as do Mexicans. But when you look at the danger that Trump brought with him, and that now exists, real danger, as we saw on January 6th, as we see when these well-armed individuals are going places and fighting what they think is on behalf of Trump and whatever distorted political and social views they have. And then the number of justices, appellate court judges and district judges and of course the Supreme Court judges that were elected. Now we're seeing reaping what was sowed with regards to laws that we took for granted, federal and local laws that are now being changed because of that. I think it's important that the Democrats have a message that turns out the vote that excites the base as much as you know, let's face it, as Trump does when he goes on these rallies.
Right.
You know, I think there's no time to be complacent. I think that our democracy and it may sound like hyperbole, but it's not. I'm the history teacher in high school. I'm a history buff. I've seen and read and studied what happens with countries that have fallen into fascist circles and I tell you, it's scary. It's scary to see how people think, and it's no time for us to be complacent. And we need listen. I'm an educator. High school all my life. I have a young son who'll be voting for the first time, and we need to get those kids registered. We need to get them enlightened. We need to make sure that they understand how important it is to be a citizen of the United States and to utilize the power that we have at the ballot boxes.
Let me try to get at least one more caller in. I let you go on and lay it out in your terms and appreciate your perspective. Let's get one more caller in before we close out. Hello. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
Hello, you're on air.
Okay, good. You know, for people of color, black people, to be the base of the Democratic Party, they haven't been too kind to us. It was Bill Clinton who passed the crime bill that devastated our community. Hillary Clinton called our young people super predators.
Let's concede the first one. And do you know how many black people, how many black congressmen and senators voted for that crime bill you're talking about?
All of them except one.
Well, all right, so number one. Number two is, when you examine the record of Clinton on all Clinton in those areas, affirmative action, mend it, don't end it. There are a series of programs that would have been, in this instance, it was the lesser evil, far worse, that Clinton blocked in terms of the objections of the Republicans. So we can't, there are things I can point to that are negative, but there are a lot more things I could point to that were very positive that distinguishes them from these retrograde Republicans. Anyway, we're out of time, and we'll catch you up the next time. Maybe you'll also have a whole hour, just nothing but listening to our audience. I like being on the soapbox, I like hearing and exchanging points of view. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. You know the show is Vantage Point. It's 99.5 FM on WBI, the Pacifica Network, and we'll see you again next week.